Welcome to another episode of Masked Monologues, the anonymous podcast dedicated to creatives. Each week, I dive into conversations with a diverse array of creatives from various industries to explore their unique processes and stories. If you're enjoying the show and want to support us, please consider leaving a review or sharing it with a friend. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I have Jill here with me. She's going to explain to you what she does and who she is.
Thank you. And I'd just like to say how delighted I am to be here. So thank you very much. So I run a business called Resound Training and Development, which I set up 20 years ago this year. So we're celebrating our 20th anniversary in October. And we provide learning and development programs for businesses and organizations, primarily in the UK. We're London based, but we do have some global clients as well. And within that, I have a team of professional actors who work with me, and we create forum theatre workshops. And we absolutely love that work. That's the first thing to say. And what it is we create short dramas about workplace issues. So we'll do a piece of user research, typically in an organization, get lots of information, and then we'll create a story about the issue that they want us to focus on. And it could be customer service, it could be patient care, it could be a difficult management conversation, such as managing performance or sickness or something. And we play that out to a group of delegates, and then they have the opportunity to interact with the scene, and they can interview the characters, so the actors stay in character. They can redirect the scene. So we play it again, and from the audience space, they stop and start it, and they give the actors their direction. And it creates a really dynamic learning environment. And because you're really immersed in the story, people learn very quickly, it's memorable, and they can recognize some behaviors in themselves that they might want to go back and change. It's a great vehicle for humor, so we get some humor in there, and it's just a brilliant way to learn and engage with people. So we've been doing that, as I say, for years, and we love it.
So the first thing I want to ask you is, how did you come up with this concept? Because I've spoken to a lot of business owners over doing my podcasting, and I always wonder where they find these ideas, and something that's discussing business, I'd say business. Business issues, business problem management, problematic management issues. How do you find that topic, that idea, and create those skits, these workshops for your clients?
Okay, so if I just go back to sort of the beginning, when I was 17, I went to the theatre with my English literature class, and I saw a production of Death of a Salesman. So it's many years ago now, and it had a profound impact on me. And that's because at the time, my dad was going through some quite severe mental health problems, and he was having treatment at a particular unit. But then the stigma around mental health was even worse than it is now. And I was, as a teenager, finding all of that really challenging and upsetting. And although I knew him, I knew that he couldn't possibly be the only person going through something like this, it wasn't really until I saw that play that evening that it really downloaded for me that we weren't on our own. It just felt like it as a family. It was just us against the world and trying to protect him. And I became absolutely passionate about theatre for a social purpose. So then, I got married and I had a family quite young, and did various jobs, none of which I really enjoyed. And then at some point, I went to drama school as a mature student and did a teaching diploma. And along the way, I came across Forum Theatre. And I thought, you know what, I absolutely love this. And I'd previously worked in HR. So when I went back to work full time, I thought, well, I'm going to go into learning and development, and I'm going to find a way to bring what I love, Forum Theatre, into what I do. And it didn't really happen until I was working on an industrial estate with a group of guys. I'd been brought in to run a management program. They were really resistant. They did not want to attend this program. And they were a group of older guys who'd just seen it all before, and they were just sort of going through the motions. And there was one younger guy in the group, and he was very extrovert and sort of up for a laugh. And I thought, I wonder if I could try this out, if I could try some drama out. So I had a chat to this young guy and said, if I put a little scene together, would you be prepared to act in it with me, just to see if the rest of the group will engage more with what we're talking about? And he said, yeah, of course I will. I'll give that a go. And so we did that. And my goodness, the energy in the room just exploded. And these older men who'd previously refused to sort of speak in the session or engage in any way, suddenly they were on their feet and they were shouting out what he was doing wrong, what he needed to do differently. And I thought, wow, yes, I was right. There's some deep connection inside of me. And I thought, yeah, I am on the right path. This is what I want to do. I just need to now go away and refine it and do it better. It was a really fun, sorry, I was just going to say it was a really funny moment though, because a couple of days later, I had a phone call from the woman who had asked me to go in and do the sessions. And she'd heard about what I'd done, and she was really unhappy about it. And she said to me, well, why can't you just use a flip chart? There's this idea that I should just stand there and write stuff on a flip chart. Whereas, the impact of getting them involved was so great. But yeah, not everyone could see that.
Yes. And what I want to know now is, let's say you're a business owner or a small business, or maybe even a medium-sized business. Would I come to you to learn about management, or would I send my employees to you to learn how to interact with other employees within the company? Like, who are your workshops specifically tailored to? Because let's say I had a management team at a company, would you tailor these workshops to that management team and teach them how to deal with these workplace hassles, these workplace inconveniences, or just problematic situations? How do you approach that? Because I know you've got your videos, and then with your workshops, is it more this hands-on learning approach?
So it's there's two routes that we normally can go down. Sometimes an organization will come to us and they say, we want a bespoke scenario developed about this particular story or this problem. And then we will do a piece of research within the organization. We will then script, and we will get sign off from the client, and then we'll cast and rehearse the actors, and then go in and present that drama in a workshop for their delegates. And often that's a series of workshops. Or an organisation could come to us and they'll say, we know you've dealt with bullying and harassment, and in a way that's really interactive, and that's the sort of thing we're looking for. And we need, X, Y, and Z to be covered off. Could you do that? And we'll say, yes, we've already developed a scenario. which would meet that. And we tell them the sort of the outline of the story, and then they'll say, "Great, yes, but could you run a workshop around that topic?" And then what we'll do is that we will make some small changes to the script to make sure that we accurately reflect the organisation that we're going into. So it could be making sure that we get the language around their systems correct, or their department names, or it could be we also check that the costume the actors wear, so that they reflect the workforce. I cast to reflect the demographic of the workforce. So we do all of that tailoring, but essentially the story already exists in our library of scenarios that we've developed over all these years. So they're the sort of two options really for our customers. And this approach works brilliantly for anything to do with behaviour. So it's very much around conversations, or the way people are treating each other in an organization. So that's why all of the diversity and equality topics can be delivered really well using Forum Theatre, along with all the more difficult management type of conversations that I mentioned earlier. So that's the sort of situation that normally arises. So last week I got an email from a organization we've not worked with before, but she'd heard about us and said, "We're looking to do some work around this topic, but we want it highly interactive. What could you do?" So yeah, that's usually the sort of route. And then we often will run some free online workshops so people can experience the way we work and have some fun working with a team of actors. So we've got some of those coming up in September. We will sort of pick out some really sort of hot topics. So in the UK, there's an awful lot of focus at the moment on sexual harassment. So that would be one of the topics that we look at in those free online workshops, so people can join those. They might be in a small business and not be a big enough organization to commission us, but they can join one of those sessions. And you mentioned the videos. So having delivered Forum Theatre for a few years, we then started to develop our scenarios as video resources as well, and they're all freely available on YouTube.
I want to know, have business ever outsourced their training or instructional courses to you? So, usually in the process of applying for a company, they ask you to go through a training program. And I'm wondering if they've ever included your videos in their training program, or if anyone's ever approached you about a project like this to create these instructional videos for their company as like a pre boarding process.
Yep, so we've created quite a lot of videos for the UK healthcare sector, so our NHS, and they're very bespoke, and they're owned by the organisation that's commissioned them. But they'll come to us. So we've done quite a lot around complaint handling. We've done videos around sort of appraisals. Managers adopting a more coaching style of management. What that allows us to do is make sure we script, all of that, all the detail around their clinical language. If it's in a clinical setting, for example, we actually film it on location in the hospitals. So yes, we've done quite a lot of work for organisations in that way. I'm just trying to think of some others. So some other examples, we've had organisations purchase a package of videos with facilitator guides and delegate worksheets. So the idea for that is that you could go on to either onto YouTube or we're creating a video, a bespoke video, for example, for an organization. But then we create a facilitator guide. So any manager or team leader could pick up that guide, go into a team meeting with their team, play the video and work through the facilitator guide and run a mini training session themselves. And then the delegate worksheets are to sort of underscore the learning that comes out of the discussions around the video or around the content. And that's a really great way for organisations to do something at a quite a low cost, but still has impact. They still have the discussion around the topic, they still draw out what's really important for their business. So, yeah, and we use them in our own courses because we also run some leadership and management courses, and we will often, use our videos in those, and we test them in our own programs, to make sure they do land in the way that we expect, and we think about how to facilitate these discussions to get the best learning for our delegates. So
So,
yeah, it's all part of the same creative process, really.
on the topic of leadership and management, I want to know for all the business owners who might be listening to the podcast, what are some common mistakes that you've seen when it comes to managing employees, when it comes to being in a leadership position? How do leaders, what traps do they fall into? And how can they overcome those traps and grow as a leader, help others succeed, and just have a flourishing team?
Well, some great questions there. So I would say that a priority for any organization or business should be working out how you're going to support your newly promoted team leaders or managers. So these are people moving into a management role for the first time. And here in the UK, a piece of research was done last year which showed that 80% of all managers in the UK were what they described as accidental. So in other words, they got the job because, there was nobody else available to do it, or they got the job because they were the most popular member of the team, or they got the job because they were really good at their current job. But that doesn't mean to say that they're suddenly going to be really good at managing a team. So I think there needs to be a real focus on those first line managers and giving them the people management skills, because in my experience, that's where it so often goes wrong. You'll have somebody who might be technically brilliant, has expertise in particular technical fields, but they've never actually had to sit down and manage a team, hold them accountable for performance. Make sure that they meet their team performance targets and so on. And that can be difficult. And then, maybe if there's some conflict in the team or something, it can be really stressful. So I think that I always advise people to look at your team. Have discussions with them about how the team contributes to the business performance. So, what is your contribution to the overall business performance? What do you need to be doing? And what's your individual place in that? So that people can really understand where they fit. Because quite often, they don't understand how what they do on a day-to-day basis contributes to the overall strategy of the business or the organization. And knowing that you are making a contribution can really help with motivation. And that's a common issue that people come to us with, and they say the team is completely unmotivated and we don't know how to motivate them, and they just want to log off early and go home, or they don't want to come into the office anymore, and all that sort of thing. And we talk about how what we need to do is create the environment in which people become motivated. And that a lot of that is about the quality of the conversations we have with people. So this became quite a common theme in our work. So we developed a model which we call ECA, and it simply stands for empathy, care, action. And if you include empathy, care, and action in each of your conversations as a manager, then you are delivering on a compassionate approach. And I think that's so needed in a lot of organizations now. You know, there's so much conflict in the world, so many problems, and then people are having to show up for work, often working long hours, juggling family, finances, and everything else. And we just need, I think, an approach which values the whole person. So is it okay if I just talk you through the model and you'll see how it works?
Yes, of course, go ahead.
Yeah, so in our, I said the first bit is empathy. So within that, we're talking about building rapport and trust, and we do that by giving the other person our full attention, listening to them. And we also need to ask for and listen to that other person's perspective, their point of view, so that we can start to understand better what they're experiencing, or maybe the organizational culture or issues from their point of view. And we need to do that in a way that's non-judgmental. So just by doing that, we value the other person. And if somebody feels valued, they're much more likely to become engaged and be more motivated, you know, really, really get on board for you. And then in terms of care, what we say here is that showing you care, again, has a really positive impact on people. And we're saying that that includes the mental and physical well-being. So just letting them know that I want to know whether you're okay. I want to know that you're managing and you're coping with your workload, et cetera, et cetera. It's also about what it's finding out what matters to that person. So we did a exercise in during COVID. We went out to our clients who are mostly sort of HR directors, people like that, and we said to them, what matters to you? And they said things like, well, you know, obviously the health of the workforce, the sustainability of the business, and so on. So it's these big sort of overarching answers. And then we followed up with, and what really matters to you right now? And then we really got underneath it. Then we got back, you know, how they were feeling, their anxiety about their health, their anxiety for their family, the future, things like that. So that's a really powerful question, and I really encourage people to try it. If you're, you know, having a chat to one of your colleagues or somebody that you manage, is to say to them, you know, what matters to you? You know, what really matters to you? So you learn a bit about them. And again, it's all a part of this sort of humanizing process. And then, of course, we care about outcomes and results. We care that the business is sustainable, doing what it needs to provide everybody with a good service, provide their customers with a high quality service, and of course provide those good quality jobs for the workforce as well. So sort of caring. So we're showing empathy to understand the other person's experience and perspective. We're letting them know that we care, and then we take action. And when I did some research on what it means to be compassionate, I was surprised to learn that action is embedded within compassion. So it's not enough to show empathy or to care. You actually need to support somebody to take action, or maybe take action on their behalf if you're being compassionate. So for that, we say it's about enabling and empowering others to make decisions and take action. Where they can't do that, it's about taking action on behalf of others, but making sure that it's both appropriate and timely. And then, of course, it's also celebrating and giving recognition. So we're often quick to criticize in workplaces because we're focused on solving problems. But it's so important to step back and think about the journey and how far the team's come, what's been achieved, and yeah, taking that moment to celebrate and to be together to do that. So that's
Yes.
a quick tour through empathy care action.
And I've spoken to others in management position, and I've noticed a lot of them have said that it comes down to dealing with personalities. So how to approach different situations depending on somebody's personality. And I want to know if your business focuses on that, or if you focus on people in management roles who might not know how to give directions to somebody because their directions just might not be registering in the other person's brain, or maybe there's miscommunication between a manager and the employee that they're managing. So if they say, work on this project, and maybe they haven't provided as many details as this employee might have liked, they're not direct, they're not concise with what they want done, and it's just more of a vague to-do type list, or it's pretty broad and it's open to interpretation. And with anything, when anything's open to interpretation, there's all this leeway for mishaps, for something not to go perfectly well. There's, what one imagines in their brain as being a good piece of art or a good project could be completely and entirely different to somebody else. So from what I've heard is that a lot of it comes down to this miscommunication and someone having this idea in their brain of how it's supposed to look, not being able to communicate that idea effectively, and then getting something else in return, then, condemning the other person for not giving them what they want, but not realizing that it was their fault because they didn't communicate in the way that they should have, and in a way that made sense to the person providing that service or product.
Well, miscommunication is such a gem for our scenarios, because it you're right, it's such a common problem in workplaces, in businesses and organizations. So one scenario that we often use is where we've got two colleagues and they've got into a bit of conflict, and that's because one of them is very focused on planning, a very planned approach to a project, and the other one tends to be less about planning and more about to managing what comes and being quite present and being able to sort of improvise really around what comes up. And neither of them can cope with the other one's style. And there's a bit of sort of personality difference in there, but it's also, their sort of preference around how they approach their work. And that gives scope for lots of humor and lots of miscommunication, which our audiences always recognize. So it is a just a common issue. So it's something managers need to be really aware of, and we encourage them to adapt their style to fit various team members, but at the same time not get too hung up about, oh, I must do this for this person because they've scored this on this particular personality profiling. I think we've got to be a little bit careful about, labeling people. And essentially, good managers can have effective conversations with anyone. And you're right, it's about being really clear about the message, being able to flex in the moment to ensure that it's landing for the other person in a way that's appropriate for them. Really being present and having outstanding listening skills makes all the difference. So yes, communication often goes wrong. It's just it's just a factor that, organizations do struggle with, particularly on email, where it's all open to interpretation and people are reading it in a particular way. They've got that other person's voice in their head, which they're putting the inflection and the tone on it, but it might not have been meant in that way at all. So there's so many pitfalls out there. But as I say, good management skills is the core of overcoming all of that in terms of being able to have really effective conversations and creating the environment in which people feel safe, feel trusted, feel valued, and then they want to do their best. They are motivated to deliver. And that's what we want more than anything. What we're seeing at the moment is an awful lot of people who are just shouldering far too much in terms of workload and working very long hours, and then they become resentful. And that's when, it creates the sort of the landscape for conflict. So much conflict can be prevented. And I think in our work, that's the sweet spot for us, is to go in and work with organization at that prevention level. So many problems can be prevented if people have had some time to step back and reflect and think about it, attend a workshop, work through some of the ideas. It's when it's, the horse has bolted, very often when organizations say, oh no, we need to address this. But then that's much harder work and requires a lot more work to actually undo some of those behaviours. So it's common sense stuff, but so
Yes.
often common sense goes out of the window when people feel they're not valued. And that's really what happens. It can happen to any of us, can't it?
What I want to know now is you were talking about how in the UK, issues such as sexual harassment and harassment in the workplace were prevalent. Can you talk about some ways that you've seen this surface or what you've seen in the workplace, because just from my knowledge, I haven't seen too much of this harassment, I guess, surface in a typical manner or something that you'd expect, not to the extremes that you see on TV or in movies. And I'm just wondering how you've seen this surface. And also with that, I'm just going to ask another question. Is in some companies, there's always this culture of getting ahead. And as you were saying, picking on other people's mistakes, pointing out their flaws, and instead of focusing on your own and thinking to yourself, how can we all grow, as opposed to how can I get ahead just myself? So I want to know how you've seen this happen in companies and what you do to prevent them from occurring.
Okay, let me start with the second question first, then, and then I'll come back to the examples of sexual harassment and so on. So, in terms of developing leaders, I think most people and most programs would start with self-awareness. That's such a fundamental piece within any leadership development. And there's all the programs I've delivered over the years, we would always start with getting people to reflect on where they're at, what their strengths are, the areas they need to develop, where they might run into problems. And that's a really sort of important conversation, and then that work remains ongoing. But you have to open people up to really thinking about where they're at, and not just what their flaws are or their weaknesses, but what their strengths are as well, and how that might impact other people, those strengths and weaknesses. So I think that's something that I think would be included, certainly in any leadership program or management program we offer. There's always a piece up front around self-awareness, and it even includes things like self-organization, you know, how you organize yourself, because what your time management's like, and because these are really busy people and they need to be able to, manage their workload and manage the team. In terms of sexual harassment, so what we're seeing here in the UK is some tribunal cases. So these are cases which have been that go through in law where somebody's made an official complaint. And it can be, often it's a series of conversations, comments, remarks, which are just inappropriate. And we often call these workshops inappropriate behaviour and banter. And it's where the banter has crossed the line, where somebody thinks they're being humorous. So there might be, it might start out with comments about how a member of staff is dressed, and what that means. And it can, go from there. It can be asking for information about their personal life, including their sexual life. It can be sharing details. The manager could share details about their dating and their sexual life, which is sort of completely inappropriate. It can be going out from the office to a work dinner or work drinks and things, getting a bit out of hand there. And people don't realize, certainly in UK employment law, if you go out with your work colleagues after work and something, an incident of that sort occurs, then it's still classed as being at work. So it's quite a minefield. And in October, there's a change to our law, which means organisations have to show that they are being proactive in preventing sexual harassment. It will no longer be enough to react to a problem that's occurred. They have to be able to evidence that they've been proactive in preventing it in the first place. So yeah, I think there's ourselves along with HR and legal colleagues, we really need to be raising awareness about that so organisations and businesses can get themselves organised and really think about what it means to be proactive in that instance. So at the extreme end, we've had some terrible cases within policing around misogyny and sexual harassment, sexual abuse, mostly men against women, but not all. And we've also had a report about sexual harassment and assault within the surgical workforce. That's a published piece of work and makes really difficult reading. So that's how that sort of details incidents of sexual harassment and assault that goes on within surgical teams. So, and we've recently done a piece of work for an organisation as a as their sort of response to that report coming out. So yeah, it's good that these things are seeing the light of day now, that they're not being covered up. But it does make for, difficult reading, difficult conversations. But thank goodness these steps are being taken to address it and to, as I say, put a spotlight on it, because unless we start having conversations about sexual harassment and abuse at work, then it's just going to continue. So that's the serious end of, the really difficult serious end of it, but also it's also recognizing that inappropriate comments and banter can also be hurtful, and people can find those offensive. So managers really need to know where the line is. And I think a useful piece of work for any organization or business is to identify their values as a business, and then to really integrate those values into everything they do, and to hold their managers and their teams to account in demonstrating those values in everyday interactions in their work. So, for example, if integrity was a core value for a business, then you would expect that honesty, you would expect openness, you would not expect people to be telling lies or covering things up. It's that sort of thing. You say if an organization says it's compassionate, well then how do you expect what behaviors do you want people to show which would meet that value of compassion? So it's coming back to that first principles really. And that's where our work with the actors can be so powerful, because when people see a story play out in front of them, where somebody's being bullied or there's been some harassment, where we see see and hear that
Yes.
inappropriate banter, we see the character's response, we see how it lands, we see how it hurts them. And then it's no longer just, oh, it's just a joke. Well, no, you've seen the impact that that comment had on that person in that story. And that's the power of it. And they're the sort of changes that we're out there to make.
And now I want to ask you if anyone wants to check out your website, see what you do, where can they find you? Can you tell us what website they can go to? And I know you have a YouTube channel. Do you have any other social media platforms? And where is the best place that people can connect with you?
Okay, thank you. Well, our website is resoundtraining.co.uk. And if you go to our forum theatre page, there's a drop down to a conflict management workshop. And if you would like to attend a free workshop, just join that waiting list and you'll get an invitation to one of those online workshops in September. As you've mentioned, we've got a YouTube channel, which is Resound Training hyphen Management Training Videos, and you'll see all our videos up there, and they're arranged into different playlists. I'm on LinkedIn, so that's Jill Brabner at LinkedIn. We have a Facebook page. But I would say that the best place is probably via our website. As I say, join the waitlist if you would like to, like an invitation to the next free webinar. Check out our videos on YouTube. That's probably the best way to get in touch. Or do message me through LinkedIn, Facebook. I'd be delighted to hear from this audience. Do come back to me with any questions or comments.
Thank you so much. It's been a lovely conversation with you. And I want to tell my guests, please do go check Jill out, see what she's doing. If you need any training for management or if you just want to learn what she's about, I know some of her YouTube videos are hilarious, so please do check those out. And
Great.
if you want more episodes like this, then please share this episode with a friend or family member or leave a review. And hopefully, we see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Masked Monologues. Don't forget to like and subscribe. See you next time.